This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.
I'm Wayne Carey, and this is The Truth Hurts.
Well, hello, and welcome again to another episode of The Truth Hurts. I'm Ayrton Woolley in Cairns. I'm coming to you from Duck this week. Got off my absolute deathbed this morning. To be fair,
you look shocking.
I'm struggling. Yeah, I'm sweating absolute bullets at the moment. All self-inflicted. I've come up and met a few mates this weekend, and overindulged slightly.
If I look like you, there'd be some sort of inquiry into what I got up to. Where was I? How much did I have to drink? You don't look good at all. You look like you've a little bit of sunstroke as well, by the look of it. You look like a beetroot.
Yeah, we're out watching mate play footy at Kazali Stadium on Saturday. Did get a little bit sunburnt. You know, when you have those moments, you know, in the day after where you're just in the absolute hurt locker, and then everything just sort of compounds it. I was in the taxi, we were moving hotels. My little 6-month-old daughter was crying. I actually thought we were going to have to pull over. That's how I thought I was going to lose everything.
It would make a great podcast, actually, if you threw up right now. Well, while you were doing that, I went out. I don't know whether you saw on my Twitter, but I went and caught a few tuna.
I did see that.
Yeah, a mate of mine, Matt from Mount Gambier, took me out on a boat and was lucky enough to land a couple. So it was a great experience. I'd never obviously caught a tuna before, so to go out there, it was massive swell. Normally they wouldn't go out when it was that big.
End of him, Duck. Keep him tight. Keep him tight.
Well, speaking of being out in the boat, did you get seasick? Were you okay?
No, I'm okay. I took a tablet before I went out, so I made that I didn't get seasick. But the swell, and the guys on the boat, they just walk around the boat as if it's not even rocking, whereas you find it very difficult. It's amazing, the sea legs, they call it, obviously. But just the balance that they have in that type of swell was, it was unreal, because everyone else on the boat was falling over every time they stood up. So a great experience.
So did you reel in the tuna, or did you just pose for the photo?
No, I caught the tuna. We'll put up some vision of me winding it in. Had very good technique too, they said. Very, very good technique. Talk about hysteria. And Jordan Ngoi is obviously in the news again. And we spoke about this only a couple of weeks ago when we spoke about Nick Daicos. Now, look, in no way am I saying what Jordan Ngoi's done, same as Nick Daicos, but it's amazing the commentary around it. People are saying he's weak, he should be given 6 weeks, you know, throw him in jail. All sorts of stuff has come out about Jordan Ngoi, because let's be honest, you know, we know that he's had his worries, and I guess he's had his fanfare over the time, but this was a football. Anyone that thinks that this wasn't a football action, don't get me wrong, he will get 3 weeks. But anyone that thinks it's worth more than 3 weeks, if you go back to Tom Stewart, who got 4 weeks, I don't think it's as bad as that. Some people are saying he left the ground. I don't think he jumped off the ground. He definitely was rising, but he didn't jump off the ground. He might have eventually been a touch off the ground. But clearly he's done the wrong thing. Football action, split second decision. The other part of it that people are saying, oh, he hit a, you know, it was just a kid. He doesn't know that it was a kid. He doesn't have time to evaluate that in a split second. Or who is it? All that he would have been doing is going in to probably tackle, then making a split second decision, the wrong one to bump. He'll cop his right whack. But you know, the fanfare and the hysteria around it, I think, has gone way over the top, because it's Jordan Ngoi. And I say this all the time, and there's some people in the media that just want to blow things up. And you know, for a guy that, like I said, has had his concerns and has really turned, he's had an unbelievable footy year. And yes, he's let the team down, because he is going to miss some weeks. But let's not turn this into something that it isn't. He's had a very, very good year, and he will come back, and he'll finish off the year in a very good manner, I think.
Yep. Just on that, the incident, I saw some comments from Grant Thomas, which I disagree with pretty strongly. I understand players need to protect themselves. He suggested that the West Coast player, Elijah Hewitt, was almost just as much at fault for not protecting himself in that moment. What do you make of that in that scenario? I mean, because there are moments you obviously do have to brace or protect yourself, but, I mean, he surely can't be expecting that when he's just handballed the footy, can he?
You do, yeah, you do have to protect yourself. You have to have vision, and let's be honest, it's not like Jordan De Goey was coming from the side or from behind. He was directly in front of him. So you've got to know that that player's coming towards you, and as soon as you kick the footy, you do go in, you do protect yourself. You don't just go in, you know, open stance.
But what could he have done differently, I guess?
Well, maybe he didn't have time. But I think what Grant Thomas was saying, and Grant Thomas doesn't condone the action, he was just saying that you do, players that get hit do have an obligation to protect themselves. And there are players that go in, and he's only a young player. So maybe that's an area in his game that he has to, you know, maybe improve. And that is having, you know, a vision or more of an awareness around him. But it's certainly not his fault that De Goey's done what he's done. And Grant Thomas wasn't saying that. I've heard a couple of people actually say it, not just Grant Thomas. But what I was disappointed in also around this, so it's not just a media thing. I was disappointed in how West Coast handle it. We're talking about a great club. I love West Coast Eagles. I really do. They are a big, powerful club, and they're a great club. But the way Dom Sheed has handled this after the game and said, oh, you'll get a month or two. I mean, and once again, sticking up for your teammate. So, tick, I get that. And it is a young teammate. But no one stuck up for him when the actual incident happened. So, clearly...
That was astonishing.
So, on the ground... So they're all standing around and saying, oh, okay, well, we didn't think it was that bad. So, they didn't remonstrate with De Goey at all. And then after the game to say he should get a month or two. And it's not old. And everyone will say, oh, of course you're going to say that. You're old school. And I do believe there's an element of you don't throw someone, you know, under the bus and try to get people more weeks than what they should just because it's De Goey. I just thought that was in poor taste. I think I might have put on Twitter weak, probably a bit strong saying it was weak to say it. But I just feel like... you know, there was just no need for there's no need for the club involved unless it's an act like a king hit or something like that. I just don't think there's any reason to get involved in those situations where not clearly there's a process that's about to occur. And De Goey will get his weeks, but it won't be. It should not be more than 3 weeks. That's what it deserves. Probably 2 to 3 weeks for me, and we move on. So stop blowing it up.
I'm really interested when you said the fact that no one remonstrated. You know, Dom Sheed's made these strong comments. If that happened to a teammate of yours, was there always just an understanding that you'd have to go and fly the flag or was it a strict instruction? Or how does that sort of stuff come about?
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's a clean bump or an illegal bump or what it is. If you see one of your players felled on the ground, you get over and remonstrate. Now, that doesn't mean give away a free kick or be, you know, undisciplined. It just means get over, fly the flag, show everyone that, you know, that you care and you know, there's a bit of push and shove and then you move on. And I know it doesn't mean a lot, but it signals intent. And they had no intent on the ground, but then showed a lot of it off the ground. And that's what I was disappointed with.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.
Watched a decent game of footy yesterday. Essendon just getting over North Melbourne. I call it North Melbourne's grand final. Each year they like to get up for the Bombers games. Loved what I saw from George Wardlaw yesterday. He had something that I didn't maybe give him credit for in his first game, and that was he's got a step on him.
You're a bit harsh, aren't you? In his first game. So how many has he played? Three? Is it?
He's played three games.
Three games.
There was just an agility I didn't realise he had, and he's got a ferocity as well to match that, doesn't he?
He was enormous, wasn't he? He's in and under. He's clean. They've got a good one there. And obviously Sheasel, Bailey Scott, all of a sudden is, well, not all of a sudden, a year and a bit now where he's showing some, just improving all the time. They've got some, you know, really, really good young players now that I think for the first time as a North Melbourne person, you can sort of look at them and say, you know what, you actually go to the footy a little bit excited now, you know, wanting to see some of these players grow. And they're growing, you know, in front of your eyes, and they're growing very quickly. And that's the game now. Kids are coming in, playing on other kids. People wonder why. We've had this discussion before. We might have even written an article or two about it. But, you know, that the fact that these kids can come in and have such an impact early on in their careers just shows you the difference in the game now to what it was in the 90s and prior. But, yeah, very, very happy. What I will say is that why is it Brett Ratten, the three games since Clarkson has left, there's been a much improved performance by the team. Now, is that the team just feeling, you know, the pressure off because the master coach is not there? Is that them, lifting and saying, you know what, we want to get him back? I mean, what I would love the motivation. Why has there been a vast improvement the last 3 weeks compared, because the 3 weeks prior to that were putrid. Like, they got smashed. And they have been really competitive. I mean, Collingwood, what was it, 25 or 35 points or whatever it was last week. But they fought back. It could have blown into a bigger margin. And then yesterday, I mean, you know, they, you know, probably in some ways unlucky to lose. You always are when it's a kick. But very, very good performance. And like I said, a lot to look forward to. But, I'd love someone to give me that answer. That we on the outside look and say, well, why the vast improvement? Why?
Well, because they wouldn't be playing really any differently. Brett Ratten wouldn't be able to change much in that space of time. So it's
he's already said that he's following everything Clarko's put into place. But clearly the difference is effort. I think they're definitely taking the game on. They're definitely taking some risks and, you know, high risk. High reward, but also you can give away a few easy ones the other way. But I just love the way, you know, they went about it, and I've loved the way they've gone about it for the last 3 weeks.
So do they have to? I mean, Alice is obviously taking a mental health break at the moment, and he's going to make his own decision about when he comes back. But how careful then the North need to be about how they reintegrate him in that regard if they've got a good thing going as well.
I'm not suggesting that, you know, he doesn't come back. Alistair Clarkson,
of course not.
He'll come back and, you know, he'll do a great job. And I think clearly, and you know what, part of that answer or the question that I've just thrown up, and part of the answer might be that Clarko hasn't been himself. And we talked about it. We said that there were some signs. So, you know, when he comes back, there might be this completely different Clarko in and amongst the group because of the pressure that he was under. And let's hope so, because, you know, we've discussed it already. We don't have to, you know, rake over the news, which we all already know about. But if he, you know, he might come back. That might be the answer to the question. That is, Clarko comes back a much different to what he was over the, you know, because of the pressure that he's been under.
You put a bit of heat on a few guys last week, the Mackay brothers. Harry played against Melbourne on the Friday night and then Ben against Essendon yesterday. What did you make of their performances on the weekend?
Credit where credit is due. And it's all about body language and it's all about effort. And both stood up. Both stood up and they should be very proud of themselves. But what it also shows you is that's the standard. That's what these guys, and I've mentioned when you're 6'82", and you're 100 plus kilos, then that's how you play. You play big, you play strong. And that's exactly what both boys did. They marked the footy really well. They competed. They didn't get out-bodied. They didn't get pushed off the ball. You know, Harry, you know, kicked really well early, missed a couple late, but still his effort and his marking and the way he went about his game was distinctly different, I thought, and Ben was unbelievable. So, you know, like I said, that's their level. And we all have bad games. Don't get me wrong. But there was a pattern with these two that showed, I think the pattern was, you know, the difference between their best and their worst, the gap was too big. and they've now shown what they're somewhere near their best can be in terms of effort and body language. And that gap, they can't drop too much below that in terms of effort and body language. I'm not talking about marks, kicks, goals. Just talking about the way they go about it. So big tick to both of those boys. They should be very proud.
Melbourne, speaking of the Melbourne game that Harry Mackay was a part of, not a great game of footy, to be fair. Melbourne did what they had to do. I'm interested in where you see the D's at. And, you know, long way to go in the season, so there's plenty of time to really hit their straps. But I feel like since they had that big run at the start of last year, they've only just been going a bit, haven't they, Melbourne? I thought they might respond a bit more strongly this year, and they still are third on the ladder. But they'd want some improvement, wouldn't they, Melbourne?
Yeah, one of those games where you just bank the 4 points. I don't think they played great footy. There were passages where they were really good. I love the surge mentality. I love that forward hand. I just, you know, that take the game on. I will say this, and Bailey Fritsch, I really like Bailey Fritsch. He was very good in their premiership year. He's an extremely talented player. But I tell you what, he's still selfish. There are still elements of his game that he has got to get better at. There was a handball that he had to give. Now, he kicked the goal, and he missed a couple of goals that he would have kicked, and maybe that's why he did it. But he will cost the Melbourne Footy Club a game if he has that selfishness. You've just, when there's a handball and an obvious handball that you have to give, you've just got to give that handball. Now, we've all done it, but I still see it too often with him. And other players give him handballs that they don't have to give him at times. He's just got to give that handball. So for me, Bailey Fritsch, as good as he is and as talented he is, I would love to see him and make sure. And if I was Goody, I'd be saying to him, mate, you've got to be better than that. That's got to be given. So that's an area for improvement with him. And another team that I saw on the weekend, another very good game, close game yesterday, was the Tigers and GWS. And Toby Green just about nearly pinched the game off the Tigers. I want to talk about Jack Riewoldt. Jack Riewoldt was very good in kicking 5 goals. But you can kick 5 goals and not be very good. Is that a contradiction?
Maybe a little bit. I think
there's games where you kick 5 and you walk off the ground, you know you've had a ripper. I think Jack would walk off, given the career that he's had, and he's been a superstar. He's a champion of that footy club, 3-time premiership player, superstar. But their 5 goals yesterday were not a great 5 for me. Now, you know, obviously it goes a long way to you winning the game, but, you know, I remember in my last year at the Crows, I kicked 6 against Essendon in a game, came off and everyone was raving, oh, you kicked 6 and, you know, raving about, oh, you're back and, you know, you should end up kicking 50 or so goals this year. I sat at my locker knowing that wasn't anywhere near, you know, even a game where I've kicked 1 but played a better game than that 6 that I kicked in that game. You just know, you know, there's a couple of easy ones, a couple that, you know, you got out the back. You know, they're not pack marks. I mean, there's just a couple of situations where I watched Jack and it actually took me back to that time at the Crows where you're running back with the flight of the ball and Jack went front and square rather than launching at the footy. There was one where he came around the back and tripped over the back and nearly...
He didn't make the contest.
Quite make the contest. You know, Jack would have normally flown for that mark and he had his name written all over it, but he didn't quite get there. So, you know, we all know that's what happens when you get near the end, but, you know, you pick up the paper today and it's sort of, oh, you know, Jack's back and all of that. Jack's good enough and honest enough with his own game and where he's been and where he's at now to understand that 5's nowhere near other 5s that he's kicked over his career. That's for sure.
Question without notice. Those 5 goals took him to, I think it's about 775 or 6 goals for his career. Richo kicked 800. So Jack, we think, would finish up this year. He might get another 15, 20 goals by the end of the year. How do you compare Richo and Jack, two, you know, Richmond champions?
Richo
from a different era?
Yeah, Richo played in a poor team for most of his career. I'm a pause maybe a little bit too strong, but, you know, not a great team. There was a period there in 95. I think we might have knocked them out in the finals in 95. They were a good team that year. They had some great players. Yeah, Matty Knights and, you know, Daffy and these guys were great. You know, Gasper was a really solid defender. They had Richo, you know, Brownie there for a while. They had some really, really good players and they had a really good year in that year. And then in a few other years, but generally they were down near the bottom and Richo kicked 800. If Richo was in a good team, he would have kicked over 1,000 goals, no doubt. So I rate Richo extremely highly. I think he was an unbelievable mark and had an unbelievable tank and proved that in his last year when he went up onto the wing. So comparing the two, I don't like to compare eras, you know that. But I think Richo could play in any era at any time and be an absolute gun. And for any, you know one of the questions that I get really annoyed with, and it happens a lot. You know, you're out, you go to a different event or it could be a corporate event, you have people come up and say, oh, how do you think you would go in, you know, this era? And I think to myself, well, they'll ask Richo that question, and or Jonathan Brown or Nick Riewoldt. And you look at it and you go, well, if Brody Myercheck's dominating, I'm pretty sure that there could be some others.
You've thrown poor old Brody.
Brody's, you know, not a, you know, he you know what Brody is? He's a natural a footballer that just works hard and gets the contest, and he's having an unbelievable year. So if Brody can do that, please don't ever ask that question again to anyone that dominated in the early 2000s or 90s.
You've said this before. I've heard you say this before. You've got rose-coloured glasses about your era.
Rose-coloured glasses. Well, just look at some of the players that are dominating and then ask yourself whether those players that I mentioned wouldn't dominate now. It's just, it's a stupid question, so stop asking it.
just on Richmond Steel, Tim Taranto again, another 35 disposals and a goal. Could he end up in the All-Australian team, of which Kane Corns is a part of the selection panel in the end?
Well, not if he gets
it. Is he going that well?
Well, not if he gets a no vote off Kano. But look, he's having an awesome year. Is he having as good a year as some of the other mids? Oh, I think he's in the argument. No question about that. He was very good again, 35. I think he kicked one. So, you know, he's having an unbelievable year. Once again, in a team that hasn't been playing its absolute best every week. But to do that against your old team as well, I think it says a lot about where he's at mentally. And I listened to the interview after the game. I thought he was very, very humble in the way, you know, he was happy that they won. But you could just see there was a little bit of sadness, you know, against a club that he's obviously left. You could just see. I just thought the way he handled that, in the humble way he handled it, I thought was very, very good from Taranto. He's having an extremely good year.
You obviously played against your former club in different circumstances, but how is that feeling? I mean, maybe it's too hard to compare.
I would have thought, given the circumstances, a little bit different. Thanks.
As I started going through that question,
someone, you know what the story will be this week that we spoke about while it left North. It's amazing. what about the hysteria around me being on the perfect match? that got picked up on
I did see that.
For everyone out there, it was us that actually posted it. It didn't raise its ugly head. We actually put it there. We were having a bit of fun around the fact that, you know, I went on a dating reality show, which was probably something that, you know, as an 18-year-old, I, you know, if I had my time again, and probably wouldn't have used those words for that headline.
I did laugh seeing that there and that baby-faced version of you. Since last week's show, you sat down with Jeff Fenwick. Some great comments from a number of our listeners who really enjoyed that podcast. What was that like sitting down with Jeff? Because you both spoke about your life experiences, more so than your sporting achievements.
What I found fascinating about having a chat, and Jeff and I have met one another numerous times, you know, outside of an official capacity. And like I said, he introduced me to Mike Tyson in Vegas. So we had a couple of beers there. And, you know, I was in an event recently in Sydney. And what you get straight away from Jeff, and what I realized doing the interviews, when you're with Jeff and when he walks into a room, for a guy that's not a big guy, he has an enormous amount of presence. He's also, you can just see, he's got a massive heart and he's actually a really nice person. And I always relate it to, and I think Dermot Brereton is very similar in the way when Dermot walks into a room, he has a presence. But more importantly, he gives people time. And I love that about Dermot. He'd talk to a fly crawling up the wall if the fly could talk. He just loves giving something of himself to, you know, anyone that wants to talk, which I find fascinating. I think Jeff's very similar. But what I did learn from Jeff, which I didn't know, because it was and it sort of shocked me, because we spoke about it's exactly the way or the same way that I felt during my career, and that is that he has never been happy with himself when he was in the prime of his career. He's more happy with himself now than, and people might say, oh boy, well, how could you be more happy with yourself given that the persona that you give off is that you're very happy with yourself? But what people don't understand is that, you know, you might be giving that off, but you're giving that off for a reason, because you're actually insecure and you're holding something in, and it is a mask and it is a persona that you're giving off. But even the great Jeff Fenwick, who was in battle in a one-on-one sport, had those insecurities and didn't like himself outside the ring, like people would think. And I found that really fascinating that he shared that with us. And amongst other things, obviously, you know, we got to meet a lot of celebrities, and I love hearing that, you know, Al Pacino, and you know,
well, he's back in the news now. He's just had a kid.
I know he's. Oh, well, I might get the reverse done. That'll be the next story. I'm going to get the reverse done and have another kid. No, I found him unbelievably humble and very, very nice to speak to. But I've had some good feedback about it, and people just love hearing from their champions. And he's one of those people's person, and he's just a great guy.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't caught that on YouTube, it's on Spotify and Apple, the same way you can listen to this podcast. Highly recommend that. How do you find being on the other side of the mic, so to speak, when you're interviewing players? Because normally you're the one being interviewed. I'm asking you questions now, but you're sitting there asking Jeff questions.
Well, it's a new skill in, you know, you want to, but I am really fascinated with people like Jeff. And people that have got a story and been through some tough times as a kid, and then gone through some tough times then after they've retired, and you know, he's got a story, and I love listening to people, not just if you're a, you know, an ex you know, four time world champion, but everyone, even you, Anton have got a story, and I'd love to know the story that over the last 48 hours where you've actually been, because, you know, you're getting redder as this goes on. We're going to have to wind it up. We're going to have to wind it up soon, because you look crook.
It's not
coming up. The foundation that you've put on before the show is really hiding how red you are.
We're just waiting to check into our room, and I just cannot wait for my head to hit the pillow this afternoon. I need a little lie down. Wayne, thanks again for your time. Hopefully this time next week, feeling a little bit better. But look forward to your next interview, whoever that's going to be.
Yeah, a few surprises coming up. A few people have taken off on me overseas. So they're coming back, but hopefully get another one or two in the can this week. So stay tuned for that.
Very good. I'll catch you soon.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.